Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the AR Library Q&A call. I apologize for being a couple of minutes late. And it's the 23rd of September, 2013. And believe it or not, Texas actually won their football game. And according to Matt Ground, we're going to win the Big 12, which I have a lot of trouble believing. But neither here nor there, let's get to our questions today. First one, we are in Married for Life on week 7, freeze and withdraw. We used to engage much more, i.e. lots of examples, to find the bad guy, protest BOCA, but now I see us sliding into that freeze and withdraw much more. But we both seem really to want this relationship to continue. In Married for Life, we'll get to a skill that gives hope. Yes, we're both shameful, and when we get to tearing up the debts, as I heard so eloquently stated on the radio today, I'm starting to get nervous that we're developing new dangerous patterns instead of lovely, loving ones. What can I do in the meantime to stay hopeful and focus on my issues? Well, you know, I think one of the things that's really important, and I'm glad you're doing the course, because sometimes just being on that call and talking each week means you're probably doing more than you once did. But I think it's how do you keep a rational conversation versus an emotional conversation? It may be that when you begin to talk, the two of you are beginning to flood. And so things that help as you go through that, I believe, would be maybe writing to each other. And try writing and where you express your thoughts and also explain what you hear the other person saying as you journal, because oftentimes that's going to be a very helpful type of deal if the other person feels you understand them. When you're bringing up issues, always explain or first give the other person's best motive for what they did, but don't stop talking. And also, the other thing that really helps you from sliding apart is making sure that you're doing other things and creating other moments that don't have to do with dealing with the conflict, because you don't want to just quit talking. You want to begin to figure out how to understand one another. And as you go farther into this, it's about, and I think as you go farther into Married for Life, you're going to see this, it's very much about learning to be able to understand the other person's heart and to hear what they're saying. And you might scroll ahead in your Married for Life exercises there too. And I think there's a week on listening, and that might be helpful. I know if either one of you is in Hope for Healing, there's also a whole piece on listening that would be a good video for the two of you to watch. That might also be helpful. So I hope that can at least give you some ideas. But like I said, part of this is also about finding a good space for us to have, even taking a break from recovery. One of my favorite couples, they do a thing where she would tell her husband when they were early on in recovery, she'd say, look, I need you to show me a good time tonight. I mean, I need to go out. We've just been, you know, this has been really hard. And so you go show me a good time. We're going to have fun. When we wake up tomorrow, understand nothing has really changed. I mean, I'm still working through all of this. I don't want you to get the wrong impression, but I sure would like us to go have some fun. And I think maybe being able to find fun at times would be helpful. So I do hope that gives you some ideas and can help you move forward a bit. Second, ambivalence. My wife and I have been married for 16 years and together for 24. We were high school sweethearts and currently have two awesome kids, 9 and 11. 4 months ago, I found out my wife was having a 6-month affair, 2 months sexual, 4 months emotional with her boss. I found out by reading her email, and in the email, besides some very hurtful things, was her telling him she needed to see if her marriage could be saved. From the discovery, she was not sure if she wanted to do the work to save the marriage. She talked and continues to about the happiness, about her happiness and why she shouldn't be able to be happy. From the beginning of discovery, I sought out marriage counseling. She was reluctant to go, but she did. And we went through counseling. However, she did not do the work the counselor suggested. During that time, I also started going to a counselor to work on me. I've encouraged her to do the same, an exercise in futility. We have stopped doing marriage counseling about 3 weeks ago. She is still ambivalent, not sure what she should do. She stopped working directly for him 3 months ago, but occasionally will see him at a district office. She tells me she continues to have thoughts for him. She has thought about leaving, but is struggling with how the kids would respond as well as our family and friends. She is sharing the pain with one other person, a work subordinate. I have three friends I've been talking to about this. Otherwise, no one knows. I've spent the last 4 months trying to process the pain inflicted on me. I know Christ is walking with me during this time, and he's truly given me strength. In addition, I've taken this time to identify those areas where I can be a better husband, father, son, brother, and friend. I know I cannot continue to push my pain aside for her sake. When should I say enough? Let's see here at the beginning. My wife was having a 6-month affair, and I found out reading her emails. So the one thing I'm not sure here is exactly when you found out, how long it is from the point of discovery. It is completely normal when a woman has an affair for her to become very attached to her affair partner. But before she attaches, typically for whatever reason, she has detached from her mate. And I think that it's important, first off, understand that would be a normal piece. One of the things that I usually suggest for someone during in this sort of situation is that they make up their mind one way or the other and not stay in an ambivalent state. You may be the only one who can actually make this decision about what's going to happen next. But if she would even go 90 days with absolutely no contact and agree to work just for 90 days, and at that time make a decision, if she would take the Hope for Healing class that we do at Affair Recovery, I think she'd find that to be very, 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 very useful, only because every woman in that situation has been exactly where she's at. And talking with other women who have been in the same situation is helpful. And I found that really it's a matter, it takes a long time for them to get through the ambivalence. What you're doing is right. You can't push her, because if you say you've got to do this, she goes the other way. But becoming the man that you want to be, that you can respect, that is huge. And it really, for couples to go forward, she has to begin to see you with new eyes, a new lens. She has to see your heart. She has to see changes in you. And those are things that ultimately give her hope. But she's also got to begin to figure out, she's got to begin to look at herself. And most people, it's hard for them to look at themselves. Even this past weekend at EMS, there were four women in a similar situation, and one of them had never really, it was the happiness thing, had never really looked at themselves until she was asked, or I asked her to write out and begin to explore what it was like to live on the other side of her and what it was costing other people. And she never considered that. I mean, she was concerned about her happiness, but she wasn't even considering the impact to others. Because in her own, I think, denial, in her own justifications, whatever, if she had really looked at it, I think it would have destroyed her, and it was just hard to shift. Even though I do believe she began to shift, but being in a situation with other women is going to be the most important thing. Most people, you know, it's important who she does talk to. Knowing those who have both gone forward and found out what's on the other side of that, talking to others and what their experiences are, sharing. I mean, again, it's the sameness that really grants credibility to the people talking to her. If you talk to her, she's probably just going to go, you don't get it, and you don't. At one level, you can try to understand, and she certainly doesn't get you. You probably might even understand her more. But your final question is how long and what do you do next? I would give it a certain period of time. You could say, you know, God doesn't turn her around by the end of the year, after the holidays, and I'm going to go ahead and move on. I don't know that I would tell her what that is, because if you kind of pre-warn her, then ultimately she'll feel like you're manipulating her. What I would do, though, in the meantime, is every time she does or says things that are hurtful, you just tell her, there's nothing you'll ever do to get me to quit loving you. There's nothing you'll ever do to get me to quit loving you. There's nothing you'll ever do to get me to quit loving you. And then when you finally file and say, look, you can't make a decision, but I can. And it's not loving of me to let you continue in this pattern. And I don't want to be a part of it. And so I'm going to move on. But you've got to know it's because I love you. It's not because I don't. You can, at some point before then, sit there and give. Just say, look, this is not something I'm going to tolerate. And she'll say, well, I don't know what I want. And you can sit there and say, well, I do know what I want. And I don't want to be in a threesome. I mean, I want someone who wants to be with me. And if she still doesn't respond, then at some point you've just got to take action. And oftentimes when someone gets in this sort of situation, it takes a lot to get them to finally gain perspective. I hope that you'll continue to write and let me know how it's going, if there's any other questions I can answer on this. But I do hope she'll get into Hope for Healing, because I think that something like that could be incredibly helpful for her, being with other people like her who could help her move forward. Next question. I have several questions today, which means that I'm probably going to answer them as I go along. First, I'll give you a bit of a background information, because I'm not sure if your answers are dependent on certain scenarios, and yes, they are. My husband and I are about a year into recovery. We've been married almost 7 years, and he was unfaithful while we were dating and starting engaging in sexual acts with coworkers when I became pregnant about 3 years into our marriage. By the way, that is very common. About a third of affairs happen at the point of inception to the child is 18 months old. His last affair was the only one that was long-term and became emotionally involved as well. It lasted 3 to 4 months. I discovered the last affair and thought through counseling, my husband came clean about his past. That was about 3 months into seeing our therapist. We have both worked very hard towards recovery. I read everything on your website and talked about this with many people who are supportive. We also see our therapist. The pain is very much there for both my husband and myself, so I will continue with my questions. The information given to me by my husband came out in an ever so wonderful installment plan, so it left me unsettled for quite some time. Through all of this and all the conversations we have, I still can't seem to remain rational when asking him questions. The pain and anger still flood me. It then creates a very tough situation for him to continue talking to me about the affairs. We've gone over and over his thought process, his rationalizations, his past, his childhood, and many of the details that I probably now regret knowing when I step back and don't take such a personal viewpoint. I can find some understanding of why things happened. His story follows many of the patterns of others entangled in his behavior. However, when I'm standing in my own world with my own personal thoughts and experiences, I still find this so difficult to truly understand because it's so irrational. Is it okay for me to surrender to the fact that I can accept what's been told me by my husband, my therapist, and all the great information I read, but personally, it will never make sense to me and what I have been through? When should I stop asking my husband questions? How can I remain rational when I do ask him questions and I feel such pain? My husband would also like to know what he can do to diffuse the situation when I lose control while questioning him. Many times I've asked something and he's told me, and it has caused me a great deal of pain, and then I go on to, why would you ever do that? It just seems so stupid. Many times he doesn't have a great answer for why. And why he did a certain thing or didn't do a certain thing, except for just plain stupidity. The further we go on to recovery, I think it is a little harder for him to even recall with all the excuses and justifications he used because of how he truly sees how flawed his thinking was and self-absorbed he was. My next questions pertain to conflict. So let's go back up. Is it okay for me to surrender to the fact that I can accept what is being told me by my husband, my therapist, and all the great information? And I would actually tell you it would not only be okay, it would be very beneficial to let go of the questioning. There comes a point, why, because it sounds like you always get to the why, and at one level, if you step back and you're rational, I suspect you really, really know basically what's happened. I mean, you don't need every detail. You know, I always say you just need to know maybe what types of behaviors. There are things like that, but how frequent was it? Was it protected? Was it unprotected? The higher the level, really in some ways the better. Because when people get caught in continually asking questions, you know, it's like you keep asking questions, not because you don't want to be with them. Of course, I know it's because you do want to be with them and you're trying to understand, but some of it is not going to make sense to you. And more than that, some of it does not make sense to him. The why is such a dangerous question. I can tell you at 29 years in recovery, I discover more of the why every year. You would think at the end, it's not a simple thing. Part of it is my layers of denial and how I saw myself were such that it took years, decades now, I guess, for me to fully see some of it. My rationalizations, justifications, in many ways, those questions are unanswerable by him to some extent. Now, there are some whys you have the answer to, and you're trying to get very specific whys to things. But if you think about the whys you already know the answers to, if he was an addict, well, you know he's got an addiction. Okay, that's a high-level thing, but I'll tell you what, if you know he's got an addiction, that's enough to know what he needs to be doing in order for you to be safe. If you know that he had a one-night stand, then you know probably what he would have to do or what you would hope you could see in the way he began to live and how he's traveled or whatever that would allow you to feel safe. Really, the reason why is important is because it lets us know if there is a reasonable possibility that we can keep this from happening again, because at least we kind of know what the spider was that was creating the problem. You know, what's the core? What was the root? But any given moment, the way someone was thinking, they may not even remember that. I mean, it's a pattern of thinking and behavior that's been in place for a long time. You could just as easily say, well, it's what I've been doing since I was 4 years old. I don't know that I know why I started that, but I do know what I need to do to stay out of trouble. Because you want to, you know, from the why, just know, is there a reasonable possibility that we can go forward and I can be safe? At some point, those questions that you're asking, what they do is they keep you stuck. They keep you trapped. They keep you, you know, from moving forward. I really like that whole thing, and you know, always asking people, you know, is this process, what you're doing right now, is it helping you move forward, or is it keeping you stuck in this event? Because if you basically understand it and can see it, right now, you don't want to spend time on the why. You want to accept what others say and say, okay, I may not understand it. I may not fully understand it. I've got to let that go so I can begin the next process of figuring out how ultimately to forgive. I know what he's done. I know how many times he's done it. Now, what's my next stage? You know, how do I get past maybe my anger and my depression? The second thing is, I would say the two of you do not even need to be talking if you're flooding to the point to where you can no longer be rational. And I would immediately call a timeout and get apart from each other. Because, again, if you once someone floods emotionally, you cannot have a rational conversation and nothing productive is going to occur. Getting away from each other is going to be critical if the two of you want to have anything constructive begin to happen. So it's getting out of that situation at that point and doing something different. So hopefully that'll help on that first part there. My next questions pertain to the no contact rule with the AP. We still live in the same place where all of his affairs occurred. There is no contact with any of the affair partners, but there is a chance he would pass by one in a public social event or something like that. Is it possible for me to completely heal with being in the situation, and does that break the no contact rule with my husband? I don't know about you personally if it's possible for you to heal, but I will tell you I know hundreds, if not thousands, of people who have certainly been able to heal in that situation. But part of that, what prevents the flooding is you coming to the place where you become more and more confident in where your husband's at. Obviously, it does not break his no contact if he sees them in an event. If they said hi to him and he just, you know, nodded his head and walked on, that's still no contact. Contact, really, people can have what we call incidental contact all the time. I mean, I don't want that. The main thing is how he handles incidental contact. But the second thing is, if he tells you that he saw somebody, if you want to know, let him know. I want to know this. I don't want to know this. Or maybe tell him, I want to know if you talk to somebody, but I don't want to know if you just see somebody. Decide what you need to be safe. Ultimately, you have to recognize you're responsible for you, and you have to commit to be safe enough for us. And you don't want to damage yourself going into places where you don't want to be. So, yeah, he can be fine, and you can heal in that situation. But at one level, it's almost like you have to maybe even pray to forgive them, to take away the power they have over you, to maybe process through who they are and somehow let them go, because once you can let go of them, because he may have already really let go of them, once you can let go of them, I think you could still be in the same place and not get triggered so badly. Let's see. Next question. We truly have no possibility of moving, and to tell you the truth, I don't want to. Even if we did, we have many ties to our home and would be back frequently. Does everyone reconciling their marriage have to leave the place where the affairs occurred? Absolutely not. Most people do not leave the place where the affairs occurred. In fact, it is very common for people to get stuck, certainly not preferable, even at a workplace with someone. But those couples just as easily work through it. I mean, it's an extra complication, maybe an extra step. But they certainly don't want to have communication with that person. But they've got to work together, the husband and the wife, you know, where they can kind of anticipate how both of them can feel safe. I had one guy, he was the senior named law partner at a firm. And he had an affair with another one of the partners. Well, their entire financial 25 years of his business were right there. It wasn't logical, really, for him to leave. It was also difficult, you know, to get this one person out. It was a large law firm, well over 100 lawyers. So, you know, we just came up with a simple thing that if he saw, we called it the weather report. Each day, he would come home and I told him, I said, look, she's going to wonder if you don't say. So say, if he didn't see her, he'd say, well, it was a sunny day. If he saw her, he said, it was cloudy. If they were in a meeting, he might say it was raining today. If she came up and tried to talk to him, he said, well, there were tornadoes out today. I mean, they just had their own little thing. And she said, how was the weather? Well, it was cloudy. It was sunny today. Or it was this. And it worked really well for them because she also found out that the more she focused on it, she just wasn't able to maintain her own peace. And she wanted to lose her life to this. She wanted to have a life. So hopefully something like a weather report might work for you. But in your own therapy, I would work hard at figuring out how in the world do I let go of these people and how do I what work do I need to do to be able to kind of help with the flooding? And again, I don't know how far out you are from ground zero. If you're in the first 6 months of finding out, you're sounding kind of normal. So know there's hope that most likely this will get much better over time. So, next question. My wife and I saw you a few times this summer and we're currently completing your online EMS course. I have a question as to best how to stay accountable with my wife and how to become less emotionally constipated, as you put it, on one of our sessions. And how to become less emotionally constipated. So any ideas would be greatly appreciated. Well, one of the things I'll tell you is much, this may sound strange, but much of the aftercare program, understand that EMSO is about trying to get the marriage in a very safe place. I mean, that's the thing we want to accomplish. And you know, your own personal growth and things like that are things that will continue after EMSO. But in the Married for Life program you do at the completion of EMSO, much of it is about learning how to connect emotionally. If you get a chance to take the Hope for Healing course, for instance, it has a whole section on learning to talk, for guys in particular, for learning how to talk about emotions, for learning how to listen with your heart, not listen with just trying to figure out how to respond to somebody, but just being interested. It's about how do you reflect feelings to someone, not what you heard them say, but actually catch. I mean, it's learning to just mature emotionally in many ways. So you will find, though, in the Married for Life, there's a lot of exercises, and especially after about week 9, 10, 12, 11, wherever in there, you'll have to begin when you're talking with each other, speaking about how it made you feel and all kinds of things, just because now we're trying to build in Married for Life a deeper connection between you and your mate. And your truth and love sessions, you'll be doing those once a month, I believe. But if you're already struggling with emotions, one other thing I could give you that might be helpful, when you did your truth and love, if you've gotten that far in your course, there's going to be a sheet of just faces, emotions. So what I would do is start reading every day, sit down with your wife and open up that sheet, and look there, or you can get on the internet and Google feelings, and get a feeling sheet, and share a feeling you had with her during the day. And then when you share that feeling, share with her the first time you can ever remember having that feeling, or another time prior to marriage when you had that feeling. And have her do the same. And then the next night, you know, right before you go to bed, identify a feeling you had during the day. To really get good at sharing emotions, it really takes practice. And hopefully you'll be able to be disciplined enough to continue with Married for Life. But also, that exercise I just talked about is wonderful. And I've had a lot of guys who have become very good at being emotional simply by sharing those thoughts and those feelings. So best of luck with that. And next question. My husband and I are currently in the EMS online course. My husband cheated with purpose and gusto from the day one of our relationship. After 15 years with him, I finally got proof a year ago. Here are some facts. He gave me an STD. There were other women involved over 15 years, two of them which he, quote, loved. He twists, evades, hides, lies, blames, minimizes, has stunted ability to empathize, lacks empathy, has anger issues, can't be decent to me when he's unhappy, stressed, or angry. He still will not answer my questions, as it is strongly recommended EMSO. I feel I have a right to know every nook and cranny of these relationships with the other women. Well, you might have a right. I don't know if it's going to be helpful you to know every nook and cranny. You just need to know what's there. In some ways, I'll tell you that every nook and cranny will cause a lot of problems for you. Anything I do that makes him feel bad, anytime I try to talk about the facts of the infidelity, if it makes him feel bad or ashamed, I get blamed for that. I'm very careful to talk about the behaviors and what has happened and not degrade him, but it doesn't matter. He gets angry with me, misplaced anger when we try to discuss it. I'm ready to give up and walk away. I see some signs that he has some empathy, but it only happens when the course or I remind him that he should be feeling empathy. Otherwise, he has no empathy, only a complete chilling coldness toward my pain and grief. I'm beginning to think that as long as he is in my life, the healing will never take place because he will continue to hurt me. How do I know when to walk away? It's been a year yesterday when I found the first thread. Sorry for how long this is, but I don't know what to do. Or if there is hope with the continued denial and willingness or inability to just walk openly with me, volunteering information, hearing, processing the affairs, where he has come from, and where he is minimizing, hiding information, blaming me, anger misplaced at me. Then he feels guilty for what he's been doing. What advice can you offer? And when does a spouse know when to walk away? So my first thought is, if you're right at a year when this came out, certainly now is not the time to make a decision, simply because the level of hopelessness and despair and discouragement and everything goes up significantly at about the one-year point. You're now going through the initial points of discovery. I have a hunch you and your husband are somewhat codependent. He probably rides your emotions at this point. And I don't know what week you're on in EMSO, but I would wait at least 6 more months before you start trying to make any more decisions, just because of where you're at now, so you can gain perspective. Second, I will tell you that men who have really never been empathetic, it is a long process. Unless he's been trying to with other people telling him to be empathetic or helping him do it, he's not going to learn in a month or 2 months or 6 months. Part of it is an entirely new way of thinking for him. To me, it's really, is he improving? Is he doing it? And I know he does, because his first natural response at this point is not going to be to be empathetic. His first natural response is going to be to self-protect. I mean, that's been his pattern for, I don't know how old he is, but obviously for a very long time. He's going to have to do, if there's hope, most likely he's going to have to do continued work. Again, hope for healing is one of those places where he can continue focusing on what he's doing to other people, but how SAA would be really good potentially, or SLAA or AA, any of the 12-step programs where he's going at least once a week and working with other people where he's got to express things and begin to look at what how he impacts other people. It takes a lot of times, a year, 2 years of somebody really working programs seriously for them to for it to finally click, because it's such a new way of thinking for him. I mean, this is a radical departure from where he once was. I can also imagine that you're deeply hurt and distressed over what he's done to you, and certainly cannot blame you for that. And I could understand why you just go, you know, I'm so hurt. And especially at the one-year point when you're feeling almost the exact same intensity of pain that you felt during day one, why wouldn't you want to just walk away? Hopefully, he's willing at least to continue being with people beyond the course, even though, who can help with this, again, such as Hope for Healing or AA, SAA, anything like that. Because if not, obviously it's going to become much more difficult. So my prayer would be that he's able to finally, I think, get his act together, be able to find other people, not get his act together, but other people to help him learn, because it's a new skill set for him. If he can do it during the course, you know it's possible. But, you know, in Romans chapter 12, I just like what it starts. It says, you know, don't be conformed any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. This is not, being empathetic will never be natural, or it won't feel natural to him for probably 2 years. And it may take 5 years. It takes a long time. That doesn't mean that it can't happen. It doesn't mean that he won't be improving. But he's going to have to learn to think different, and it's going to have to be very intentional, and he's going to be conscious about it for 2 to 5 years before it feels natural to him. And I would just say, if you can be patient, that's fine. If you can, I understand. But if he's doing work to learn how to be empathetic, such as other programs like AA or Hope for Healing, then you've got good hope. If, on the other hand, he's just saying, I think I'll get it, and you're always having to tell him, it's probably a lot more discouraging, because he's got a lot to learn. So try to look at his heart as much as possible and see if his heart is hard. It sounds to me that he's got old patterns of being very defensive, and hopefully as you go through the Hope for, or not Hope for Healing, but the through the EMSO course, he'll continue to maybe see things differently, and y'all can make a little progress. I do wish you well. I know it's a hard thing. I'll be praying for you guys. Last question for today. My husband and I started EMSO program back in July. We attended the intro call and the first week call, in which the first week he didn't do the homework. Then he got too busy at work to deal with our marriage crisis. We ended up quitting even before we started. This is nothing new to me. We did the same thing with Hope for Healing. He's betrayed me through 20 years of marriage with porn, strippers, emotional affairs, oral sex partners. He's even confessed to me that our first year of marriage, he went out with the intentions of having an affair, but nothing happened. I honestly have to say that day one, things between us were never the same. I've always felt in my heart he had a sexual encounter with another woman that night. I've even suspected a few more affairs, but he denies it. We don't discuss the affairs anymore. We cannot communicate. He doesn't seem to answer my questions. He gets angry and blames me. He shows no empathy, no remorse at all. He has an attitude of just get over it already. Why is it so hard to openly communicate for him to reveal freely on his own will? Rick, I feel until the whole truth is revealed, we cannot heal. I just feel he is not ready to heal. When will this occur, and how do I know he's being honest with me? My husband is a liar, a compulsive liar. He lies about everything, even the littlest thing to the biggest. I don't know what to do anymore. He promises to make things better and doesn't comply. He makes promises he doesn't keep. Just wondering if there were some suggestions on what to do next. Thank you for your time. Wow. That is such a hard situation. That person, to me, is it. You're, what you're describing, you know, obviously I haven't talked to him and I don't know, so I don't want to, I'm hearing one side of the story. But if that is true, then it surely doesn't sound as if he is committed to recovery, which leaves you in an incredibly difficult situation. Even in the previous answer I just gave, at least this guy's going to the course. This person is not even doing anything. And so it feels probably very hopeless to you as to, you know, change, that change will occur. If he says that it just won't happen again, you know, it's hard to know. And especially, you know, I always believe the parts of the story that remain untold are the places where the devil, you know, has a stronghold. And, I always am concerned when people continue to hold secrets and haven't been able to come clean, and especially if they're not recognizing that they need help. You know, to understand him, you know, I suspect he has a great deal of shame, and that really inhibits him from being able to do things. I don't know what his belief system is, but to me, that just sounds really sad and tragic. So you've been together for 20 years. And all you can do is maybe set your own boundaries with him at some point. I don't know if you, I don't know how you motivate somebody like that. All I know, well, the main thing that motivates guys anyway is the fear of the loss of relationship. But at this point, you know, he's not, it sounds like, addressing things. I'd suggest that when he's not communicating with you, that you just say, look, there's nothing you'll ever do to get me to quit loving you. And the next time he refuses to communicate or he lies, say, you know, there's nothing you'll ever do to get me to quit loving you, instead of confronting it. And then if he doesn't shift again after, again, maybe 5-6 weeks, I would sit there and say, look, there's nothing you'll ever do to get me to quit loving you, which is why I'm going to ask you to leave. That's why I'm going to kick you out. That's why I'm going to file. That's why we're going to separate. Because my love isn't enough to keep you from doing things that are damaging to you and to others you love. I don't want you to continue down this path, and it's not okay to be like you are, and you need to get help. And I do hope that you're in a place where, if it needs to come to that, where you're able to get away from him and at least have a separation so he can decide what he wants. And I would tell him, if you suggest separation, I'd say, you need to go get help because I'm not the solution. And if you want to try to go find, maybe you think you can find somebody else who will make you happy and won't mind this, but just know I'm only doing this not because I'm angry, but just because I love you. And if you can do it out of love versus doing it out of anger, that's what will have the most impact on him. That's why I suggest this technique sometimes. People change by contrast far more than they change by conflict. And by contrast, I just mean when you I'm going to get there in a second. I always think it, when you return kindness for their snottiness or whatever, it makes them have to look at themselves. When someone responds in like kind, they're able to justify why they did what they did. When another person just responds with kindness and says, you know, I love you, you can't get me to quit loving you, keep trying. Now, they may get angry, they may run out, they may go crazy, but it makes them look at themselves. The contrast makes them see themselves different. So try not to respond in like kind. For maybe 6 weeks, you do that. Just try to respond in love. And then if that, he doesn't shift, if that doesn't, that contrast isn't enough, that's when you say, look, I'm doing this because I love you, not because I'm mad, but it's just not okay to be like this, and you need to move on. Or you need to go get help, but I'm not going to be a part of this. And, you know, if you change, that's fine. If you don't, I've got my choices too. And I just choose not to live like this. So, but hopefully it will do something like Hope for Healing. Or you can go back. I'm sure we'd let him back in the Hope for Healing course if you wanted to do it. But he's got to do it for him, not for you. And that's why I wouldn't be telling him what to do. I would just keep telling him that you love him. And then tell him go figure it out himself. Because as long as you're telling him to do it, it sounds like it's not his idea, it's yours, and he's not going to follow through. So that is all the questions for the day. It's the longest Q&A call we've had in a while, and probably because I got stranded up in Colorado in the flood. But thank you guys very much, and I'll be looking forward to you talking next Monday. I hope everybody has a great week to healing.